Now, the fourth noble truth, the first is that there is suffering. The second is its cause, which is our attachment and greed and so forth. The third is the end of suffering, nirvana. I mean, it has many levels of meaning. It goes very, very deep. We're just beginning today. Nirvana also means the unconditioned, that beyond all that we possess or own or grasp. And coming to that, which is not someplace else, but it's actually to be found here. So that then you can say, as Suzuki Roshi said, if when I die I suffer, that's all right, you know. That's just suffering, Buddha. The fourth noble truth is the path to the end of suffering. It's also called the Eightfold Path, and it has right speech and right action and right livelihood, virtue and meditation, all those things which there isn't time to work with today. But the ground of the path is the understandings we've talked about, that there's suffering, but that there is another way, that we can sense in ourselves some other potential for much greater compassion or greater love or greater wisdom in this life. And that in order to awaken that, it doesn't happen by accident. It follows the law of karma, which is nothing mystical about lamas in Tibet and all of those things. The law of karma means, as one Vipassana teacher Ruth Dennison, who's a friend of mine, said, somebody asked her, explain karma really simply. She said, karma means you don't get away with nothing. That how we think and how we react creates what our world will be, our response. So that spiritual life doesn't just come down, okay, now I'll be a spiritual person, because these are great ideas. It comes by our planting the seeds in our heart and experience. It takes cultivation, the cultivation of our inner garden. So that if we practice aversion and irritation and hatred and judgment and so forth, after a while it becomes really easy. And in a situation, that's our response. If, on the other hand, we plant the seeds consciously, we practice opening or compassion or peacefulness or wakefulness or that intimacy that I spoke of, then in situations easy or difficult, through the nourishment of that, that becomes our way. And we awaken, we uncover, we manifest as our Buddha nature. Now, if you want a simplified version of the Eightfold Path, it has, you know, all these steps, and the ground of it in some ways is also virtue, that you don't harm other people, not through speech, through your words, to say what is true and also what is helpful or kind. That's the principle. Not through killing or stealing. And it's very hard to meditate after a day of lying and stealing. You know, try it. They're really connected. Who we are, that's what our spiritual life is. Meditation is called practice. It's not called perfect, right? It's a place that you practice so that then you can live it. Sexuality and drugs are included. Very good things for our times. We can create a lot of suffering through sexuality. It's a neutral energy that can be associated with greed and compulsion and exploitation, or can be associated with caring and communion and love and intimacy. What do we do with that energy? Because it's powerful, you know. To act in ways consciously that don't bring harm to a second or third person through our sexuality out of our greed. But to use that as a force for awakening, to use our words, our actions. How many people in this room have made idiots of themselves around sexuality? Don't raise your hand. There's no need. Right? We know already. I mean, this is powerful stuff. So it says, take your speech, your sexuality, intoxicants. The Buddha knew what was going on, and he didn't even live in California. Right? Intoxicants. Refrain from drugs, alcohol, and other addictive substances to the point where they lead you in any way to loss of awareness or lead you to any heedlessness or action that's unskillful. Some people interpret it as just stay away from it, which for some people is quite necessary. But the basic principle is if they cause carelessness, there are 10 million drug addicts, 20 million alcoholics, 50 million alcoholic people in alcoholic families in our culture, not to speak of other addictions and the suffering. So it's to respect alcohol, drugs, our speech, how we live. is our spiritual life. Ajahn Chah, my teacher, said, do you want an Eightfold Path in a simple version? I'll give it to you. The Eightfold Path is two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, a tongue and a body, and that which walks the path is the heart or the mind. It's what we see and hear and taste and touch. That is actually the path. And then the work of the heart of the Eightfold Path, or the middle path, is to find a letting go, a wisdom, a balance in all things, and to touch it with compassion. It does not mean withdrawal from the world. There's something called the near enemies in Buddhist psychology. The near enemy to equanimity is indifference. It masquerades as that. The near enemy to love is attachment. You may have noticed sometimes. There's all this love, and then this other thing sneaks in after a while that wants that person to be just this way and never change. The near enemy to compassion is pity. Oh, that poor person, they're suffering, as if they were different. It separates us. Attachment separates us. You're out there, and I need you. Indifference, the near enemy to equanimity, says, I'm fine by myself and the rest doesn't matter. I mean, it's all impermanent anyway. If this marriage doesn't work, I'll try another, or that job doesn't work. I could always have more kids anyway. It's kind of that hippie or whatever, you know. It's all one and it all doesn't matter. And that's not spirituality. That's running away. It's fear. Equanimity means the capacity of our being and heart to enter into or open in the midst of life. It's not getting somewhere, but it's an opening. And that requires courage, and it requires finding our capacity to love. From Chief Seattle, this we know, when he gave all his tribal lands to the government, when he was forced to. All things are connected, like the blood which unites one family. All things are connected, and whatever befalls the earth befalls the children of the earth. People did not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it, and whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. So you don't even do it for anybody else. You really do it so that when you look back at the end of your life and you say, what good did I do? What touched my heart? That it's there for you. Tell you a story before we do our last meditation. I was traveling in India with my wife about 8 years ago or so on one trip. And we were in the desert in Rajasthan. We were up in Mount Abu visiting a wonderful teacher named Vimla Thakkar, a wonderful woman who does the work of Gandhi and also teaches meditation, combines village development and very deep inner meditation. My wife started having these painful visions of dying and death and so forth, which sometimes come in meditation. That's kind of what I interpreted them as. And so, but it was still quite difficult. One night she had this vision of this person that she thought she knew very well, who was dying, was throwing up this orange substance. And it was really scary, frightening, and woke her up. And then the next short time afterward, she had a vision. She has these two Native American spirit guides that come just once in a while and in really important moments in her life. And this vision came again, only there were three. There were those two guides, and there was a third one, and it was her brother. It's very strange. Well, a week later, given the time lag and the way things are in India, it's a very sad story, actually, we received a telegram, and the telegram said, your brother Paul has died of suicide. And he had a family with three children, so it was really a very sad situation. He was an alcoholic, and he'd actually started to dry out. He'd started AA, and as he started to come back into consciousness, as often happens, the first year is the very hardest, he began to see the havoc and the pain and the damage that he hadn't faced and that he'd caused and that it was a part of his life. And it was just too much for him. He didn't have the help and the resources to face that. And it said, this telegram was mailed on a particular day. It said, your brother Paul died last night. Well, we looked at the date of that telegram, and as you can imagine in the story, it was the night that she had the vision of this person throwing up this orange stuff, and then the vision of her brother as a spirit guide where he was fine. And then she had to come back and go to the funeral and so forth. But the interesting thing for this moment in the story is that here we were literally as far away on the earth as you could be from California. We were halfway around the world on top of some mountain. How is it that she knew that her brother had died the night that he died? And that you've heard this story from other people. If you search for the awakened heart, says Chogyam Trungpa, if you put your hand through your rib cage and feel for it, there's nothing there except for tenderness. You feel sore and soft, and if you open your eyes to the rest of the world, you feel tremendous sadness. This kind of sadness doesn't come from being mistreated. You don't feel sad because someone has insulted you or because you feel impoverished. Rather, this experience of sadness is unconditioned. It occurs because your heart is completely exposed. There's no skin or tissue covering it. It is like pure raw meat. Even if a tiny mosquito lands on it, you feel so touched. For the spiritual journey, this experience of the sad and tender heart is what gives birth to real fearlessness, to the capacity to live in the world with the heart and compassion of a Buddha. Real fearlessness is the product of our tenderness. It comes from letting the world tickle your heart, your raw and beautiful heart, and discovering that all is connected with it. So the work that we do in ourselves is the work that we do for someone else. It's the same work. Now, the art of meditation is to turn your difficulties into the path. It's not that your difficulties are obstacles to get over so that then you can be spiritual. Forget it. You know, when things are groovy, it's fine to be spiritual. Yes, very easy, peaceful, very fine. It's in the difficulties that the heart becomes liberated and awakened. It's in those very places. That's what alchemy is about, lead to gold. And that is the capacity of us as humans.